My name is Cheryl. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 4th, 1989. And I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or any mind or mood-altering objects since that date, thanks to you and the God of my understanding. I have a sponsor. I sponsor. And I do service, and I believe that's what kept me in these rooms. Okay. Kevin told me if I give him $10, I can get 5 more minutes. Just reporting. I want to thank Alan and Richie for getting us here. I want to thank Jeff for asking me to speak and Randy for calling. And it's really a privilege to be here. I was born in the Bronx, and I grew up in Bayside. And I did a lot of damage in this fair city. I escaped in 1986, and I got sober down in Florida. It is very humbling for me to be back in New York and to speak. So I appreciate this wonderful group. You've been so kind in welcoming and greeting me. So God is going to shake the truth out of me, whether I like it or not. My story isn't something amazing or different. It's my story. My husband reminded me, none of you know me. I could basically say anything I want. We were kidding around. I don't know why. I grew up in Bayside. I had a great family. I had 2 parents. I had no alcoholism. I was really jealous of you people that had alcoholics in your house. You got to point a finger because the only problem that I saw was me. And I don't know why at 8 years old I was different. I don't know why I didn't want to be me. I didn't know why everything that you had is what I wanted. I don't know why that little girl just didn't fit in. And I know today that normal 8-year-old girls don't feel that. I don't know where it came from, but I know at 12, I found the solution. It was with a group of kids in upstate New York, and I had my first drink, and it was Southern Comfort and Kool-Aid. I know. Had I known I was going to say that from a microphone so many times, I would have thought of something much better to start with. Unfortunately, that's the way it was. And I drank, and I passed out, and I got sick, and I loved it. And I fit in, and I was good enough, and I didn't want to be you, and my curly, frizzy hair got better. You know, I heard a speaker talk from the microphone about hair, and she was the only one. So I am sharing that because that was a big deal. Hair was a big deal because it wasn't as straight and gorgeous as many of you have today. And when it, you know, when it went like sideways and up and it didn't flow in the breeze, it was an issue. So I'm glad that I can get that out now. Thank God to those iron things now. It almost fits in. So I can't tell you at 12 I drank every day. I didn't. But when I got the opportunity, I was, 12 years old, and I found other non-conference approved materials to use, and I was on the way, and whenever I could, it was better. My life was just better, and I went to school, and many of my schoolmates are here, and how kind, that is so weird. It's so weird to be sitting in a room with people I went to junior high school with and high school with, and they didn't even share when we were in high school. What's that about? We were like in rooms doing this non-conference approved stuff and drinking. Not once did they offer me a drink. They didn't know me, but that has nothing to do with it. Very selfish, you guys. So I get up and I grow up and I do the best I can. And I met a guy and he asked me to marry him. And I thought it was a good idea. I don't know why. I didn't really have many plans. I listened to many people that had goals and things they wanted to do and college and careers, and I didn't have anything. I wanted to continue to drink so I could fit in. I wanted to, my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and it seemed to work for her, so I got married. He asked, the next thing, I had this manual, and the manual said, after you get married, you have kids. I got kids. That little baby I held the first time, and I knew, how was I going to teach him to be giving and caring? How was I going to teach him self-confidence and self-love? Because I didn't have it. So I knew there was a problem. You know, God gave me that little bit of glimmer at that moment. Nothing else changed, and I kept drinking, and I kept doing anything that would make me feel a part of. I hated myself. And the more days went on, the worse it got. You know, we used to have, this was up in Belrose. We used to have the mothers over with the kids. We called them play dates, but we brought our blenders and made margaritas. Well, the kids were playing, and we thought the mom should get to play as well. And I mean, you know, after you have one kid, you have another kid, because again, that's what the manual said, and I was very sick, and you wouldn't be surprised that the marriage didn't last. And he left me for my sister-in-law. Yeah, thank you, thank you. It was bad. It was bad. So, and that was 1986. I was 29 years old. 60, I know. And that's when I left for Florida. I took those two little babies, and I moved to Boca Raton. And this is what I learned. Rich or poor, drunk or sober, Boca is good. And I hit that bottom really hard, because now the manual was gone, and really had nothing else. I had two little kids and an ex, and I'm in Boca, and I'm doing the things that the Big Book talks about, that incomprehensible demoralization. I will tell you how Bill Wilson put those two damn words together is beyond me, because when I read that, boy, did I know exactly what that was. And I did those things over and over and put myself in places that were dangerous and bad, and those two little boys would not have had a mother had God not been watching over me. So I am marching along, and my mom is back up here, and she's still in New York, and she gets cancer. And I was not the daughter. I was not the daughter I wanted to be. I was a runaway at 12 once I started drinking. I was cut in school. I was dating every possible guy that offered me anything that he could offer me. And it's not the kind of daughter I wanted to be, and that's by far not the kind of girl that my mother wanted to raise. So she's dying, and I decided that I have to go back, and I take the kids out of school, and I'm moving back to New York to be that daughter and take care of her before she dies. So they were out in Syosset, and I put the boys in school. They were about 4, 5, and 3 at that time. And they go into school, and I am put them on the bus in the morning, and she's bedridden. And I go in every morning, and I say, Mom, what can I do today? What can I do to help? And she would say, well, maybe a cup of tea or maybe a magazine would be nice. I think I can do that. And I'd go outside in their house. As you left the bedroom, there was like a little bar area to the right. And I would pass, and I know it was only 8:30 in the morning, but I knew it was going to be a long day. And I'd stop, and I'd have one. And there was a little couch next to it, and, you know, one really wasn't doing very much, so I would have the second one. And I would sit on that couch, and a few hours would go by, and my grandmother would go in and get my mother the tea and the magazine. And I'd spend the day on that couch. And I hated myself. The woman is dying in the next room, and I can't get off this couch to get her a cup of tea. The day ends, and I get the kids off the bus, and they see Grandma, and I put them to bed, and I swear, tomorrow's the day, and I can do this. I mean, I can do this. I'm really a good person, and I know I can do it, and I know I can make a difference. The next morning comes, and I get the kids on the bus, and I go back in, and I say, Mom, you know, what can I do? And she say, it's a little cold in here. Can you get me a blanket? And I'd say, okay, and I'd get her that blanket. You're wrong. And the blanket would, and I'd want to get the blanket, and I'd stop, and you know the drill. I'd sit on there, and I'd have one drink, two drinks, and my grandmother would get the blanket. And I wanted to die. And I stayed there 3 months. I never got that woman a thing. And I took the kids back to Florida. And she died the following May. And I was never that daughter. And I didn't know how. So I get back to Boca and go back to work. And the one thing I brought, because remember I was up in Syosset for 3 months, the one thing I brought back with me was a guy. You might find it hard to believe. They weren't forming lines outside for me at this point. Two little boys, I wasn't really very self-supporting, and the drinking was a major problem daily. So when this guy seemed interested, I thought I'd better take him. So he moved back to Florida with me, and we got married 2 months later. And we didn't have a sober breath. He was a bartender. And this part I didn't know, and I never was a bartender. Is it your job when the bar closes to bring leftovers home with you? I would wake up in the morning and there would be like bodies all across the living room. And I would wake up getting the kids ready for school and I'd know for a second that this wasn't normal. That there was something that the other mothers in the neighborhood weren't getting their kids ready for school stepping over drunk bodies. Again, that was it. From then on, one day he wakes up and he says, "I need help." I said, "Yes, you do." And I drove him to treatment. This was in 1989. Might I tell you, we had some awesome treatment centers in Boca Raton. He wasn't suffering much. I signed him in, and I was thrilled he was going to get the help he needed. And they had this class for the families so that we could learn how to take care of these poor souls when they get out. And I thought I should sign up to learn what to do for him. So I sign up for the class, and Monday morning comes, and it's a week long. And we're sitting around this big circle, and they're going over the rules, and they say you need to show up on time, and you need to be honest, and we expect you to spend the whole week here. And please, you know, there's no taking of any prescription drugs or any alcohol. Don't do that. I said, "Excuse me, like not even wine?" They had me gather my belongings, and they sent me to the guy upstairs with the 20 questions. And I failed. And they told me to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had no idea who you were. Kind of strange to me today. I had no idea what you did, where you lived. I just didn't know anybody that was sober. I just didn't know. And they told me to go to a meeting, and I went to an 8:30 meeting at Crossroads in Delray. And it was a biker meeting. Yeah, it was funny too. I didn't know, and I sat there, and I don't remember very much, and I didn't talk to you. But you were laughing. You were laughing, and you gave me hope. There was really not much laughter for many years of my life. You gave me a meeting list, and you said that there were meetings closer, and I should go to one tomorrow. And I found one, and I found a meeting right down the street. And I walked in, and we had to go up a big flight of stairs. And on the left side was the meeting room, on the right side was a VFW hall. And talk about making a daily decision of whether you want to drink or stay sober. That's what we did. And I walked in, and there was a woman at the desk, my first meeting, and her name was Lana. She had 90 days in a row. I couldn't believe it. And she had this hammer. I thought she was like in charge of AA. I wanted to be Lana. I really did. And I went back there every day. And, you know, Lana didn't stay sober. Over the years, I have heard about her, and I think she keeps trying. So keep her in your prayers. But I went back, and after 3 or 4 days, one of the miracles of this fellowship happened. I walked in, and you said, "Hi, Cheryl." And I was a part of. I really was a pretty cheap date. I just wanted to belong. And as you do here so, so amazingly, you gave me a service commitment. And I had to show up now because I had to make the coffee. And boy, I waited for you to tell me how great that coffee was because I was going to make it. And I was sure that you never had coffee like I was going to make. Not one of you ever said a damn word. I stayed sober. That man got out of treatment, and we stayed married. It was very difficult. I had not seen him sober in my whole life until he came out of treatment. And I had an amazing sponsor, and she told me that my job was to be a kind and loving wife, and if God wanted the relationship to be, it would be, and if not, there was nothing I could do. My job was to stay sober, take care of those children, and do service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did that for 7 years. And it was very, very hard. And he was a yeller. And I learned to keep my mouth shut. Sometimes I had to do it like this, because the words would come out before I got to leave the room. And one day he asked for a divorce. Can you believe it? After all that work, 7 years working the steps, sponsoring, doing service, I mean, I had become amazing. And we got divorced, and I didn't know. I said, this is the second divorce, God, now. Not supposed to happen. You know, the first one I understood, the second one, I said, it's in God's hands. But the truth was, I thought if I did what I was supposed to do, I would get that happily ever after. And I came to meetings, my sponsees would roll me in the front row, and I would cry, and they'd roll me home, and after a few weeks, I woke up one day and I thought, you know, 40 years old, I don't look too bad. The boys are older. I'm going to be single in AA. I thought this was going to be fun. And 3 months later, I'm in a coffee pot at a meeting, and there's this guy there, and he is hot. We celebrated 19 years of marriage in April. See, God's plan is always good. 7 years in that marriage was for me to become the wife for him. I had to learn to be that kind and loving wife. I had to learn to be selfless. I had to learn to be in a relationship. I had to learn to be a partner. I had to learn to be giving and loving. It had nothing to do with the guy I was married to. But I don't know God's will. My responsibility is to show up and do the next right thing. And he had Stephen waiting for me. So, back up a little bit. I'm sober 30 days, and I'm going to a meeting every day. You told me to go to a meeting every day. I'm going to get an A in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go every day, and it's an 8:30 meeting. So, my youngest son is 6 at the time, and I go to kiss him goodnight. His bedtime is 8:30, but I'm leaving at 8 o'clock. You told me I have to go to the meeting early. I kiss him goodnight, and one night he says to me, "You're never here to tuck me in." Wow. You moms and dads out there, that hurt. And I thought for a second, what am I doing? This poor little boy. And God said to me, "You're not going to dancing. You're not going out to the mall. You're going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to save your life and his." And I said to this sweet little boy, I said, "I'm sorry that makes you sad. If you want, we can change your bedtime to 8 o'clock. He said, "No, that's okay." And really what I want to share with you is, please, we did the best we could as parents with what we had. Don't beat yourself up. You be that kind and loving mother, father now. You give what you can and get rid of the wreckage of your past. That little boy served in the United States Marine Corps and opened the war in Iraq, graduated college since, is starting his own business, and has not once regretted going to bed at 8:30. So life is good. I was 90 days sober, and I'm at the meeting every night. I'm at the 8:30, and I would meet my sponsor at the front. We had this desk, and I would tell her about the day. 90 days sober, I would tell her about the day. I would tell her about, really, I would tell her about him, what he wasn't doing right, what he should be doing better, what I could have done better for him. And this woman was a saint, and she would listen, and she would listen. And finally, one day, 90 days sober, she says, "Cheryl, do you know the girl over there?" And I said, "No." And I kept talking because I hadn't even gotten to the good part of the story. She said, "She's sober 7 days." And I thought, okay, but it's 8:25. The meeting starts at 8:30. And if I don't finish the story, I'm going to have to double up tomorrow. So I said, all right. And she said, I want you to go introduce yourself. And I rolled my eyes. I know I did. And I said, what do you want me to say? She said, you tell her how you stayed sober 83 days longer. And begrudgingly, I turned around and I walked over to that girl and I put my hand out and I said, hi, my name is Cheryl. And she started to cry. And for the first time in my life, I thought about you, not me. Why was she crying? What could I do better? What could I do to help? Where was she going to sit? Had she been here before? And that is service, my friends. And that is what you have given me. Every time I'm thinking about you, doing something for Alcoholics Anonymous, showing up, doing something for my home group, for my district, for intergroup, for my area, I've been blessed with many, many positions. For that brief few minutes, I am not thinking about the world according to Cheryl. I still think about me a lot, I'm sorry to say. But when you call, you interrupt those thoughts, and it's the biggest gift I can get. My husband and I have an amazing life. He is sober longer than I am, and if he ever gets to talk, he will tell you that. Sometimes he tells me if I have a bad day, wait a few years, it'll get better. But we travel for Alcoholics Anonymous wherever we can. We love to go to conventions. We love to speak. We love to do service and give back. I wasn't that daughter. I am today that mother. Stephen and I have three sons. Joseph is, you're going to find this hard to believe, 36. He's given us two grandchildren. John the Marine is 34. He's given us a puppy. And Michael is 25, and he's given us two grandchildren. And we are amazing parents, and we let them fall, and we let them struggle, because you taught me that when I struggle in Alcoholics Anonymous, my life gets better because I get closer to God. I was going through a rough patch a few months ago. Son moved away, some dear friends passed away, and started to think, what's this? I turned 60. I started thinking, like, what is this? What's going on? And thought, well, maybe I'm going through like a midlife crisis. And I had some friends that said, we're so excited for you. I said, what? You're going to like the next level. The more pain you're in, the more I work. The more pain I'm in, the more I pray. The more my conscious contact with God, the more I'm doing my meditations in the morning, the more I'm doing service, the more I'm picking up the phone. So my God has a wonderful way of making me a little more uncomfortable so I can do more for you. I found this, and it was very true for me. I wanted to share it with you. It says, who you spend your time with will have a great impact on what kind of life you live. Spend time with the right people. God bless you.